Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here at 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app from the Hyundai Score Studios. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball again on this last day of 2022, hoping that 2023 doesn't seem quite so long for our baseball teams in town. Good morning, Bruce. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, David, and all of our tremendous listeners, the Chicago baseball fans, the best in the entire world, are here with us every Saturday, and we're open to you at 312-644-6767. David told me that we have decided to have open phone lines the entire 2 hours this week, so please get in your resolutions for your teams. Also, we want to hear from you the biggest story of the year for the Cubs and White Sox, the biggest, probably the best player, the worst player, and your thoughts for the future. Again, 312-644-6767. And David, it was a mediocre year, to say the least, on the South Side.
Another one.
It was a disappointing year in the first half for the Chicago Cubs on the North Side. More enthusiasm going with their strong finish in the second half of the last 70 games of the season. So where would you like to begin today?
Well, I think it's interesting because today, the last day of 2022, we want to look ahead, but we also want to look back. We want to do both, and we want to do it with our audience because, Bruce, I know you were up and ready and raring to go last Saturday morning, but we weren't able to talk baseball, so we had to redo the promo. It wasn't 52 weeks a year. It was 51 in 2022 because the Bears pregame show, which I hosted, preempted inside the clubhouse. I got some reaction from people who were like, where's our baseball talk? So today is our baseball talk. I think we want to begin here in our opening segment because we're going to piecemeal throughout this show Cubs segment, Sox segment. We want to get to both because of equal time. But let's bring people up to date, Bruce, because it has been a busy offseason for the Cubs, a very productive offseason so far for the White Sox. But since we last talked, the Cubs made the big move. They introduced Dansby Swanson. There's been some other things that they have done we'll get to. But I want to get your thoughts because I don't think we have spoken since Dansby Swanson had the opening press conference, and I don't think he could have made a stronger first impression.
Well, I agree with you, David, and I think the shortstop that fit the best for the Cubs or anybody in baseball would have been Trey Turner. I mean, he's a superlative player. You had to pay $300 million plus to get him, and that's what occurred with Turner. But I think Swanson is a very good fit for the Chicago Cubs. I like it a lot. I like the idea that the Chicago Cubs defense is going to be up there with the best on paper in the National League to start the 2023 season. And we know that championships are won with the defense up the middle, center field, shortstop, second base, and catcher. That's where balls go to die, and that's where the Cubs have gotten stronger, much stronger defensively. So if you look at Bellinger, and he doesn't hit better than he did last year. If you look at behind the plate with Gomes, he doesn't hit better. Now they've added Barnhart. This is a much better defensive team and something that is very satisfying to David Ross, who pushed very hard for better defense, better pitching, more wins. I think that's the way David Ross looks at it, and I think that's the way Jed Hoyer in the front office have attacked it in the offseason so far.
Okay, Bruce, I'm going to go through some headlines, some developments, and I want to get your quick thoughts on each one before we get out to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. Liam Hendricks taken off the trade block, according to various reports. That was something that was in question the last time we did a show here on Saturday morning. Do you think that's a good or bad move, or was that surprising to you?
Well, I was initially surprised when we heard the name, and because it sounded like a money dump, okay? And that's not what you want to hear from a team that has aspirations of world championships. And I have never heard Jerry Reinsdorf, Rick Hahn, or Ken Williams talk about anything but trying to win a championship over these last 3 or 4 years, 5 years now, going back to the beginning of their rebuild at the end of 16 into 17. So from that perspective, it surprised me. But it doesn't surprise me because the White Sox also have the highest payroll in their history. That's good because also, in general, around Major League Baseball, the dollar prices are up, and people are back to where they were before 2020, where you have full ballparks for the first time in 2022, and new TV deals nationally with new networks and with the cable cutting going on everywhere. There's a lot of money around for Major League Baseball. So from that perspective, getting back to the White Sox and Cubs, there's plenty of money to be spent, and there's plenty of money that has been spent going forward. So I was surprised by the Hendricks thing initially. And then I thought about him having some arm issues earlier in the year, and whether or not they had enough fortification in their bullpen to get by without him. If they had to move those dollars to bring in a left-handed hitter that was going to cost about the same. As it turned out, they did bring in the left-handed hitter that's going to cost the same, David, in Benintendi. But at the same time, they didn't have to dump the money, which is a good thing for Sox fans and Sox Nation.
Bruce, in the last 24 hours, there have been a couple headlines that potentially affect both teams. When you see Trey Mancini is negotiating a contract with the Washington Nationals, that is a report that is out there. And then when you see Gene Segura signing a contract, 2 years, $17 million, with the Miami Marlins, that's the White Sox potential second baseman. A lot of people speculated could be in the mix there. I don't know how much they ever talked to him, if at all, but I think that name made a lot of sense had they gone in that direction. And Mancini, I think you have also reported that would have made sense for the Cubs. This isn't final in Washington, but it isn't a step towards Chicago, it wouldn't seem. What is your reaction to both of those moves?
Well, talking to a lot of agent sources and people around the game, Mancini's asking price, according to the Cubs people, was higher than what they wanted to pay. So from that perspective, Washington sounds like the landing spot for him going forward here. I don't think the Cubs are totally out of it, but in the last probably 14 days, it went from a very hot topic of Mancini coming in to cooling down because of the dollar amounts that the Cubs didn't want to pay in that area. So, looking at further additions for the Cubs, you're probably still going to have first base, and the name I'm hearing the hottest right now is Eric Hosmer.
Both teams would probably benefit from his presence in the clubhouse. Every team would benefit from his presence in the clubhouse. When you say Eric Hosmer to the Cubs, Bruce, I don't have a huge, strong opinion against that, except for the fact that the next question that I would pose is, if you bring Eric Hosmer into the mix, what does that say about your commitment or lack thereof to Matt Mervis? Because aren't those duplicate parts? Isn't that one blocking the way of the other? And we've seen this a lot, but I just wonder, if you sign Eric Hosmer, what does that mean moving forward for your young prospect?
Well, it's a good premise that you bring up, David, except that they're both left-handed. And when you have two left-handed hitters and you have a DH now in the National League, It's a change, because you can mix and match, have them both in the lineup when you need to. And that means that Mervis isn't rotting on the bench against right-handers if you're playing Hosmer at first base or vice versa. There's also protection for Mervis, who hasn't played more than a handful of games at AAA. And, again, he dominated National League, I mean, minor league baseball last year, but that's not a guarantee that he won't go through some rookie downs like many of the players do. And Hosmer is not going to cost the Chicago Cubs very much money because San Diego had eaten most of the contract before they moved him to Boston, and that is going to be a cheap buy-in for the Cubs, whether they pay, what would you say, $2 to $5 million, you know, for Hosmer. It's not going to, in this modern era of baseball, that's, you know, that's chump change. So
right.
From that perspective, I don't think you'll lose, and I don't think you lose playing time for Mervis.
I'm going to read a couple names of starting pitchers who signed with teams, and let me know if you think that either the Cubs or the White Sox would have been in on these guys or had any chance of signing these guys. Corey Kluber signs with the Red Sox. Eovaldi signs with the Rangers. Rich Hill signs with the Pirates. This guy's going to play forever. Did any of those guys, did any other starting pitcher still on the market, Bruce, appeal to the Cubs or the White Sox?
You went to high school with Rich Hill, didn't you?
I think I did, Bruce. Thank you. You're giving me a lot of credit.
Yeah, you're only 42. So
right.
I would say that Kluber and the Cubs had numerous conversations. They were interested at one point. That was close. As far as Hill goes, the way that baseball is going now, and I think the Dodgers pretty much started this about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe six, you stockpile starting pitchers as long as you can afford them, and you assume it's going to take 7 or 8 pitchers, starting pitchers during the year to get through a season now. And because the demand is so high and the volume of starting pitchers so low, you know, teams like the Dodgers say, oh, okay, we're going to sign Rich Hill, and we expect them to start 15 to 20 games because someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to need time off. We're going to have to spot start people along the way, and he's the perfect guy for that. So for me, on any roster, I think Rich Hill makes perfect sense. It's not going to cost you a ton of money. You're going to get quality 4 or 5 innings. You know, I stop myself at that point and, you know, wonder what I'm even talking about. But that's the modern game, right? You're going to get
right.
quality 4 or 5 innings. And it's like, huh, sounds good, you know. We're going to get
They don't make Mark
innings.
Burley's anymore.
They don't, David. So from all of that, I would say that Hill would have worked for either team, maybe even more for the White Sox because of the fact that you don't know for sure about Clevinger's year. You don't know for sure about Giolito coming back to form that he had a couple years ago. So more for the White Sox and the Cubs, but I think, you know, both teams did really well with the starting pitching they went after.
Last question, shortstop related, and it includes two guys who are veterans. Number one, as 630 asked, can the Sox get Elvis Andrus to play second base? Is that still a possibility? And a bigger name out there still, Bruce, I want to get your reaction to. It doesn't necessarily affect the Cubs or the White Sox, but it does affect the balance of power in the National League and potentially the AL Central if he returned to the Twins. But what is the latest with Carlos Correa, who is under an agreement now with the Mets, but there's some reports about them backing out because of concerns that were raised during his physical?
Well, we're hearing right now that that the deal with the Mets, that the Mets are asking Major League Baseball for some leeway that it's not acceptable in the rules right now as far as the contract goes. I have an add-on to that. An addendum to that would be, David, that for the first time in Major League history, Carlos Correa is allowed to play for more than one team. Okay? So he's going to play for both the Mets and the Twins in 2023. They'll split them up, maybe first half, second half. They split the salary. And it's the beginning of something new. Instead of trades, you work out shares with players for seasons. And we laugh right now at the idiocy of that statement. But down the road, some Major League baseball guy at in New York will say, that's a good idea. we can share players. We can share our stars around with numerous teams, and that way they can defer the money because they don't have to pay for the whole $40 million a year for a player like Correa. Anyway, that's not going to happen this year. But my point is the absurdity of what's going on here as far as Carlos Correa.
Bruce popping the corks early here on a New Year's Eve edition of Inside the Clubhouse, right? It's 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start the conversation with Mickey, who is in Park Forest. Good morning, Mickey. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning. Yes, I'd like to make a couple of comments, please. And they're all related to the Cubs. I don't think Hoyer has what it takes. He let Schwarber go for nothing. You know, free agent, we could sure use him now. They knew the DH was coming. He gave Darvish away for projects that we'll never see anymore. And I think it's personal. They let Contreras go, but he's good enough to be with the Cardinals. I don't think David Ross ever liked him. And I think that Hoyer gets second-line players. He always gets people that have Tommy John surgery or high ERA if they're pitchers. We never get the top free agents. So until we do so, as much as I love the Cubs, I am totally disgusted with the front office. And when they come on these shows, no one ever nails them. They just give them softball questions.
Mickey, wait a second there. Okay,
I take that personally, and I agree with Mickey.
Hold on there, Bruce. I'll get to you in a moment. Mickey, are you still there? Because I really want to ask you a question. Okay.
Sure.
So I want to counter that, not sounding defensive, but the Cubs did just sign Dansby Swanson, and they said they needed to get one shortstop of the four. They did that. They signed.
Yeah, but
Jameson,
they got the lesser of the four. They didn't get the top.
Hold
one.
On. Mickey, we'll have a conversation, but let me finish my question, please.
Sure, sure.
So I want to get your thoughts because maybe he was the lesser of the four, but he was one of the four, and that was an objective. They signed Jameson Taillon to a contract that, yes, he's coming off, he's had Tommy John surgery, but he's coming off a pretty strong year. That's a very professional addition to your starting rotation. When Jed Hoyer was on the morning show last week with Zach Zaidman and Mike Mulligan, he was asked every question and put in the context of things that he was set up. What happens if you didn't sign one of these four shortstops? These were professional questions, and these guys aren't asking them questions just because they're safe or they want to curry favor or worry about access, which is ridiculous. Mickey, I don't think that's a fair criticism, even though I understand why you would be disappointed with some of the things this offseason.
I'll admit, Mickey, that I ask many softball questions, not just the 12-incher. I think I throw up there the 16-inch most of the time. So it's worked for me well for my 40 years. But I agree that sometimes I'm guilty of not asking a harder question that a fan would ask, and that kind of leaves people just a little bit wanting more. So I'm going to do better, and that's my resolution for next year is to throw less softball questions at our guests.
Mickey, but thank you so much for the feedback. And last thought goes to you. Are you disgusted with the Cubs offseason enough to the point where you think that they are going to be any better in 2023?
I don't think they'll be any better. The division got stronger, so I don't think they'll be any better. And I'm an old guy. Phil Cavaretta was my favorite player, so you know how old I am. But I'm never leaving the Cubs, but I am disgusted. I don't think Hoyer will ever get anyone but second line. You always get pitchers that have Tommy John surgery history or the ERAs of 4 point or 5 point. They're projects. This is Chicago. We should get top of the line free agents, but it seems like we don't.
Thank you, Mickey. Have a happy new year. We appreciate you listening. We love your calls and your feedback. And it gives you a lot to think about. I think, Bruce, as we get ready to go to break here, and we'll talk about it, Cubs fans might be an element of them disgusted by what's going on, like Mickey, or a lot of them might be encouraged by the second half. It depends on your perspective, and it depends on where your expectation level is after a season, the second straight one, that was highly disappointing and orchestrated to lose. That was something that the Cubs kind of invited, this kind of reaction that Mickey just expressed.
Have the Cubs caught up to the Cardinals on paper? No, they have not. Okay. Have they caught up to the Brewers? Might be a better question. And we'll know a little bit more about that as spring training evolves into the 2023 season. My guess is still a little short of Milwaukee, but again, are they a team that's going to be an 80-plus win team? And will they continue to add on? And I think there's a good possibility the Cubs will be that in 2023.
Well, let's keep that conversation going. We're going to have equal time this morning. Cubs look ahead. White Sox look ahead. This is the final Saturday of the 2022 calendar year, the final Inside the Clubhouse of the season. So we will begin and continue our Cub conversation when we come back. Bruce Levine, David Haw, Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And the 3-2. Swing and a drive. Deep left field. It's got a chance. Gone. Welcome to the Chicago Cubs, Christopher Morel. He missed first base. He goes back and steps on it. What a moment.
Can you believe it? Right? It's just one of them nights here at the Friendly Compound.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine, talking baseball till 11 o'clock. What a highlight. What a fun memory that was. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer right here on The Score with Christopher Morel and Bruce. A year ago on New Year's Eve, I don't think anybody had we talked about what to look ahead for in the Cubs in 2022. I don't think anybody would have been taken seriously had they said, well, you know what? This kid, Christopher Morel, he's going to come up and he's going to have this infectious enthusiasm and he's going to hit for a little bit of power. He's going to play every position. He's going to be one of the bright spots of the Cubs in 2022. Nobody would have bought it. Mickey would have been calling, criticizing our baseball opinions. And yet that is the beauty of the sport because things happen that you can't anticipate. So as we begin here, our Cubs segment, looking ahead at what to expect. I don't know what you can expect when it comes to those kinds of surprises, but he's at the top of the list of reasons why, boy, you just wait and see what's going to happen, and you might be pleasantly surprised.
I'm going to play devil's advocate on this one, David, because as much as Morel showed well, if he was on a championship-caliber team, he would have been looked at as a June Swoon type player because as he came up, the first 3 months were great. The last two were not very good. And I think he was a under 600 OPS, right around six, early sixes, if you like those kind of numbers. So he did fade, but the ability to play multiple positions, the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, the personality are things that you certainly want and need on your team. As to where he fits in 2023, is he a third baseman? Is he a super utility guy? Or does he really go back to the minor leagues for the first month of the season? Because you do not, and I'll repeat, do not, you fill in the rest, David.
I don't think he does, Bruce. I don't like that idea. I like Christopher Morel being your super utility guy who bounces around, keeps everybody in a positive frame of mind, and give you a little bit of pop at different positions. But it is a good opportunity to look big picture at what the Cubs still need and what they have acquired so far. We talk about them being strong up the middle. What we haven't mentioned yet is they added Tucker Barnhart, the defensive-minded catcher, from the Reds and the Tigers, an Indiana native, so that's always makes me a little partial to those guys. But Tucker Barnhart is going to be splitting time with Yan Gomes. Cody Bellinger in center field. You have Nico Hoerner moving to second with Dansby Swanson at shortstop. There aren't going to be a lot of obvious roles for Christopher Morel, but you know how things go. There's attrition, there are injuries, there's a DH. There are all kinds of ways. When you look at the Cubs roster now, added Swanson, added Barnhart, they re-signed Drew Smyly. What is left for them to do? And how will the players that contributed last year to a 39-31 record after the All-Star break, how do those guys fit in as they kind of plan on what they need in 2023?
Yeah, David, you know, for me, and I was talking to our buddy Jeff Vukovich, our Nationwide insurance guy and one of the great baseball people in the city, a good friend of mine, and he said Morrell's best position is third base, okay? Let him play there. Make Wisdom the first baseman along with along with Mervis, and then you have a platoon over there, and you have guys that can move around a little bit still. So they're locked in there, but just throw Morrell at third base and see what you have. But there's still a lot of holes, you know, that they have to fill. The major hole for me is the bullpen, the closer. You know, who is that going to be? Alzolay? Is it going to be Wick? Hoyer probably won't be back to the earliest in the middle of the year. So from that perspective, what does that bullpen look like? If there's any great success for Hoyer and the front office over the last 2 years, it's identifying veteran bullpen guys in the offseason and having them contribute to the first half of the year and then trading them for valuable parts the second half of both 2021 and 22. Fantastic job by the Cubs front office for doing that, but it leaves a big hole as to whether or not you can repeat that or you have the arms in your organization now to start filling those roles going forward.
Let's go back out to the Score listener line powered by BetQL. Tony is in Elmhurst. Tony, welcome inside the clubhouse. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. First, I'd like to say that I was a Southsider and kind of stick for the Cubs right now, but I'm, you know, the first Cubs game I went to was with my friends from. I was born and raised on 31st and Wells Street. And we went to the Cubs Giant games 1969, and the Cubs won the game 10-4. And four of my friends sitting there stuck for the other team. I was the only guy that stuck for the Cubs, actually, and they still do that today. But anyway, I think the window for the White Sox, they'll probably win the World Series before the Cubs. I honestly say that. But as far as the Cubs are concerned, you know, I think they're maybe 2-3 years away yet. That being said, because Jed Hoyer hasn't addressed, you know, other than that Swanson is an infield, some depth, but you look at their outfield, two-thirds of their outfield still are on one-year contracts, and they could be gone at the end of the year, and they'll be in the same process at the end of the year also. And
thanks,
you know,
Tony. Appreciate it. Appreciate the call, Tony. Two or three years away from what? Bruce, I think that when we talk about the Cubs, frankly, when we talk about sports in Chicago, all of the teams seem to be in very similar situations. We say they're a year away from this or a year away from that. Where is the bar? Now, if you're talking about the Cubs competing in 2023, I want to ask you this. How far away are the Cubs from contending for a playoff spot? Because you have to crawl before you walk, and you have to walk before you run, and all those things and cliches. Is this a Cub team, when they report to Mesa in February, that can legitimately say they're going to contend for a playoff spot?
Well, now that you have expanded playoffs, I would say yes. You know, almost half the teams are going to be making it now, and I look forward to when there's expansion again, that there'll be even more playoff teams for making it. I don't know if it's good for the sport or not. Generally, I don't like that. But the idea was there more excitement in many cities? You ended up with the National League champion this year being the sixth seed, right? Okay. So by the older format, the Phillies would not have been your champions in 2022. So that said, my roundabout answer to you, my Chet Kopic answer to your short question is, yes, I think that the Cubs are going to be considered, because I think it only takes now between 80 and 85 wins mostly to maybe get that last seed. And if that's the case,
I think you're right. Yeah. I would agree with you, Bruce, because otherwise, why do you go out and sign Dansby Swanson? I know he's got a 7-year contract, but you are aggressive in pursuing one of the four shortstops with the idea that you can instantly contend for a playoff spot with the expanded postseason. I think you go get Jameson Tyone. You want to take advantage of Marcus Stroman's deal. You want to take advantage of the veteran depth that you have accumulated and stockpiled in your rotation. That's why Drew Smyly is back. Isn't that the case? 2 years, $19 million. I don't think it was a long-term deal. You want to, don't want to sign a guy at this stage of his career unless you're trying to be a team that flirts with 500, maybe gets, you know, you get 85 victories, and then you sneak into the postseason. That's where the Cubs are, realistically. I guess maybe that's optimistically to a lot of people, but I don't think that's outlandish to me. Doesn't sound like it to me.
Look, if you get 90 starts from Tyone, Stroman, and Hendricks, I will say the Cubs are in the playoffs, okay? I'll just go with that. And that doesn't mean that they'll still be over 83 to 87 wins. I mean, I think that's the highest that anyone would pick them for right now, considering the unknowns and the idea that you're still depending on some players for linear improvement in their games. That's not necessarily always the case. But I think on paper, and that's strictly what it is right now, the Cubs are a better team than they were at the end of 2022. Does that make them ahead of Milwaukee or St. Louis? No, but that could still make them a strong contender for the playoffs.
708 says the Cubs should be used to coming out of the bullpen and bring up Wick and some other minor leaguers. They will compete this year. 847 says Christopher Morel should play third every day. And, of course, our guy Peoria Matt chimes in, if the roster stays as is, I wouldn't worry about a closer. So there's always that. Let's go back to the phone lines, Bruce, and bring in Gary to talk Cubs. Good morning, Gary. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Morning. I think the Cubs' two biggest needs right now are one more hitter, because I think they have holes at third, first, and designated hitter. And I'd like to see another left-handed reliever, maybe like an Andrew Chafin, bring him in. As far as their best player, I'd pick Dansby Swanson. And as far as their worst player, I hate seeing Patrick Wisdom out there. He strikes out 40% of the time. If you make him a platoon player at first and he only plays against left-handed pitchers, I could go with that. But if you play him every day, that's just ridiculous. He strikes out way too much.
Thanks, Gary. I appreciate the phone call. Nobody had mentioned Patrick Wisdom up until then, Bruce. I wonder where you think he fits in. And as for the left-hander out of the bullpen, need to get your thoughts. I was negligent in not mentioning earlier Anthony Kay, kind of a project signing for the Cubs, perhaps, but he is a left-hander that the Cubs have added to their bullpen. What do you think?
Well, it's a good idea. I think they need to do more. Look, I like Patrick Wisdom. It's a great story. He's not a good guy, a terrific guy. But if he's your everyday starter at third base for X amount of years, you're probably a second division team, okay? So, and it's not just on him. He's done what they expect. You know, he's a 25 to 30 home run hitter. He's going to drive in some runs, and he's going to strike out. If he gets 600 bats, he's going to strike out 175 to 200 times. That's just who he is at this point in time.
I think that 312 raises a good question on the text line. Regular listener says, where was the power coming from with the Cubs? They were lacking power the last couple seasons. That was a weakness, and they have yet to really address it. They are also losing Wilson Contreras' pop in his bat. That's not to be overlooked. There's so much angst, and maybe I helped create some, but the emotional response to Wilson Contreras sometimes overshadowed what you're going to be missing from an offensive standpoint in that lineup, Bruce. I'm not sure they adequately replaced him from an offensive perspective, even though they might feel like defensively they have upgraded it with Gomes and now with Barnhart.
Well, they added 25 home runs at shortstop. That's a good place to go, okay? That's a real good place to go. And then Bellinger, at his worst, is 16 home runs in center field. That's what he was last year. And it was bad. I mean, he was still hitting 210 after hitting 165 the year before. But he's still going to run into 15 to 20 home runs even in a bad year. And I expect him to be better. Suzuki's going to play a full year. I expect 20 home runs out of him. So when you look at some of those things and you have Mervis, you don't know what that's going to look like. I think Horner, as he continues to grow into his body, is a 15 to 20 home run guy. So I think the Cubs just automatically are going to hit more home runs than they did last year. And they have to. But, again, you know, we don't know about the linear growth of Morel or Horner. We don't know for sure they're going to hit 15 home runs or 10 home runs. But I think you like both of their chances to continue to be better hitters in this league. And their power and their ability to identify pitches improves as well.
I agree with that. And it's a fair concern. I also think that when you look at the way the Cubs are trying to build themselves a playoff team, it is now the emphasis being on pitching and defense. And maybe it always is that, Bruce, and that's as old as baseball. But you look at the way that they have now structured their staff, and we could go through the potential starting rotation. And you mentioned, and it's a great number to keep in mind, the 90 starts between the three veterans. I don't know where Kyle Hendricks is in his recovery. I'm not sure what to expect from Marcus Stroman if the second half was a sign of what to expect or just maybe something that was sustainable. And you look at the young pitching depth, Keegan Thompson, you know, Justin Steele, Wesneski, all these guys, we haven't even mentioned Killian and the young pitchers that they are stockpiling. As one very optimistic listener texts in, 773, Cub fans have never had a pitching staff this deep. They have always bashed their way into the playoffs. They are now, dare I say it, this is the texter, the 90s Braves, pitching and defense. Boy, would that be something. But the point is being, Bruce, that is the emphasis of this offseason, and I think that may be the way the Cubs, the formula they're trying to use to get back into the postseason.
Look, postseason's nice, but, you know, one of our callers, you know, just, I think it was Tony, talked about the fact that there are a lot of guys that there's no commitment to. So left field, you got a guy that's going to walk or sign a long-term deal. Center field, you got a guy that's going to walk or sign a long-term deal. Catcher is going to walk after this year, the starting catcher. Stroman can walk away from his contract after 2023 with his clause. So if you look at it the way, and objectively the way the caller looked at it, it's true. They have a hole at first base right now that we don't know is going to be filled. Second base looks and shortstop look good. Down the road, you have young center fielders, young outfielders that are probably going to fill those roles. But the commitment toward long-term solutions on the Major League roster are limited at this point.
All right, Sox fans, now it's your turn. We covered the Cubs, looking ahead, what they have done, what they still need to do. What do you think? 312-644-6767. Your turn is next. We see you, Mike, in Northbrook. We will get to you. The White Sox on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Jimenez, deep to left, and this is gone. Put a charge in that baseball, cut the lead in half, and that is home run number 15 for the big guy.
Welcome back, Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine, talking baseball until 11 o'clock. Thank you for that Eloy Jimenez home run highlight. I am glad there was a highlight to get back and play back from the 2022 White Sox season that lasted
so
forever.
Negative. Such a negative guy.
I'm not looking ahead, Bruce. We're keeping things positive here. But you have to admit, it was a long season, and now there is hope again, maybe on the South Side, from a lot of different people. They have seen... Do you have hope for this season based on what's happened so far?
I don't disagree with you, David. I don't disagree with you. I think of all the frustrating years of watching the White Sox for White Sox fans, hearing from them, watching them myself, talking to you every Saturday about it, writing about it on our website, talking about it on Marquee. Oh, no, that's the Cubs. the thing that the 2022 season could have been the most frustrating in maybe since 2007. You remember 2005, the world champion White Sox. 2006, they won 90 games but didn't make the playoffs. And 2007 was a horrendous year for them, very frustrating year. They felt they added some power arms and were going to be a very good team, and it turned out to be the opposite. So this, with maybe the last 20 years at least, that was, to me, the most frustrating White Sox year. And, you know, many years, if they won 81 games, you know, you'd say, okay, they're on their way. But in this case, it was probably 15 games less in the win column that most people expected.
So let's look at what has happened since the end of the season, Bruce. I think Rick Hahn meets the media after Tony La Russa makes his retirement official, introduces the new manager, Pedro Grifol. Kind of a surprise, but leaning into intensity and defense and fundamentals and the things that baseball managers like to talk about, and you hope that they can execute. Now you look at what they did to the roster. Rick Hahn, after saying he's not going to throw money at the problem, has thrown money at the problem. Nobody's complaining. Nobody's complaining about Andrew Benintendi playing in left field, a gold glove addition. Nobody's going to complain about Mike Clevinger supplementing that starting rotation, because I think that if those guys play like the back of the baseball card suggests they can, they will be upgrades. But Bruce, where's this magical trade, this clever idea? Where's this creativity from the front office and Rick Hahn that we were promised? Is that still a possibility before spring training starts?
Well, I think the creativity is Benintendi. I mean, that is very creative. And it's, you know, you and I and most people were talking about, hey, the White Sox need a left-handed power bat. They need a power bat. And what they turned up with was a on-base percentage guy who makes a lot of contact, is a very good outfielder. So they improved their defense. They improved their top-of-the-order getting on-base function for the guy that's 350 on base percentage lifetime. So from all of that, I really think it's an underrated move, and it's going to serve the White Sox extremely well. That said, there's still holes, and the holes are still maybe depth in the rotation and a catcher, okay? Where is, you know, if, okay, Grandal's in a walk year. This is his last year of his contract. Two injury-plagued years. The second half of 2021, he might have been the White Sox MVP the way that he hit and helped them win the division. But the rest of the contract has not looked good due to his injuries and lack of ability to hit. Last year was just a complete waste of time for him and the White Sox. You have Zavala as your backup. Is that going to be enough for you going into 2023? You need another catcher.
You need another catcher. You need some other elements. You're exactly right, Bruce.
And I don't know what catcher you're going to get at this point in time. Most of them are off the board. There might be a few guys left, a veteran or two here and there. But from that perspective, who's putting down the fingers is the most essential thing for me on a team for a catcher.
And you're talking about the catchers, not the fans, right? You want the catchers putting down the fingers, not the fans putting
more
up the fingers.
More than one finger, David.
Okay.
Okay?
Right.
More than one finger.
Just making sure I'm understanding you correctly here, Bruce. Let's go out to the phone lines. Our buddy Ron is on the south side. Good morning, Ron. Welcome inside the clubhouse, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys. Two things. Oscar Colas, mainly because, I mean, he's, you know, 24 years old. I don't know how much more he can improve in the minor leagues. It appears that he's going to be the right fielder. And saying that, guys, the second base situation, in fact, you can put him down at the bottom of the order because I'm sure he will have some struggles. But as far as the internal options, the White Sox don't have anything at second base. And, David, you said this creative thinking. I've told you all, I know for the last 3-4 weeks, they were not going to be able to trade to get a good player. And you're not going to take somebody off the team now. So that's it. As far I also agree with you, David. I thought Segura, would have been a good option, but the main thing is you're not going to be able to have that situation with those guys and Colas out there. So thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the phone call. Bruce, I like the idea of Oscar Colas in right field on opening day. I've always thought that he was a feasible option there. I don't know about their internal options or alternatives at second base. Romy Gonzalez right now seems to be the guy they're pointing to take that step. I think that's a mistake only because a team like the White Sox, you hope, would have more proven veteran depth or a starter at that position. Maybe Elvis Andrus would be the guy. I'm not sure.
Well,
what you think.
David, you were the one that's saying, let Sosa play, right? You know, you wanted
that was a team
play.
That needed a spark. Bruce, you are now twisting me out of context. That was a team that was struggling, needed a spark. Lenin Sosa was a guy that could provide one. He didn't do it. I was wrong.
He's no good
but now,
anymore. No, he's a young player.
I know, but
give him an opportunity.
You don't need two experiments, two youth projects right in the lineup
so
on opening day.
I have the perfect trade for the White Sox. It will cost them very little. Probably a top 15 prospect in their organization for a trade with the Chicago Cubs for Nick Madrigal, okay, who does no longer fits with the Chicago Cubs, okay?
Oh, I love the irony.
So you reacquire Nick Madrigal and you implement him at the position. The Cubs lose nothing there because they have their second baseman for the future and shortstop for the future for the next 5 years. Madrigal has no spot on the Cubs. He doesn't play another position. He's had injuries, but he is a guy that makes contact. He does bring a lot of energy, and it would be a perfect flyer for the Chicago White Sox to take.
You have had crazier ideas, Bruce. I don't think that's so crazy. It's just a matter of making that trade. Let's squeeze in Owen in Willowbrook before the break. Owen, Happy New Year. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, guys. Hey, I like the idea of Madrigal, but I also think that if they thought out of the box, I think the Sox could go after Gleyber Torres at second base from the Yankees. No, you could trade. I mean, it'd probably take a lot to get him, but I think he'd be a nice fit for that ball club. The Yankees have a lot of middle infielders, and I think he'd be really good in that ballpark. The other thing is the Sox are so right-handed in the starting rotation that I actually think Chris Sale, and he hurt his finger, not his arm. He's coming back from his arm. I think Chris Sale could be available, whether wow it be in a starting position or he'd be, if you traded Liam Hendricks, he'd be a great closer.
Whoa. Owen, thanks for the phone call. Bruce, of White Sox reunion, Sale and Madrigal in the same clubhouse?
You didn't tell Owen he's had crazier ideas before. I mean, look, I think you know, Sale, if he's not in the moving van business anymore, where, you know, he's removing furniture and getting injured any longer, why not? I mean,
well, Bruce, let's face it.
Most of that contract.
Well, let's face it, though. Chris Sale, if he came to the White Sox, he would have to approve the City Series jerseys first. And then if he liked those, then he would be welcomed back with open arms.
Well, you also have, if you purchase him, and I think he's got 2 years or 3 years left on a contract, at least two. You also have a back-end answer if you want to say Chris Sale's now your closer for the future.
I think if you're going to invest hope in a hard-throwing left-hander who has been somewhat injury-prone or coming off an injury, Garrett Crochet is the guy to do that. I don't think that reinvesting in Chris Sale makes a lot of sense, although I will agree with Owen. There is a need for a left-handed component in that starting rotation. They're way too right-handed. I don't know how you address that now, Bruce. I don't know how much that will hurt them, but it is something that it's not ideal. It's less than ideal if you're the White Sox right now.
Absolutely. Open phone lines in the second hour. We're taking your calls. Who had the best season? Who had the worst season? Your Cubs and Sox players. And biggest disappointments in 2022.
Wow, that's a long list, and it's going to be a fun hour, but that is exactly what we will do when we return. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.